Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is Rewind, and look at what else? All the emotions leading up to Tuesday's election. But first, wish I was there. Tony Evers on climate change. Governor Walker says no, quote, unelected and unaccountable, close quote, official will run DNR on his watch. Charles Franklin says the race for attorney general is overlooked by voters. And Barack Obama and Scott Walker trade insults. Wish I was there.
Vast majority of people in the state of Wisconsin, or the scientists, understand that climate change, not only do we believe in it, it's here, and we're seeing it almost daily across this country playing out. I would bring back scientists to the Department of Natural Resources. I would make the Department of Natural Resources secretary an independent appointment approved by the legislature, and also have an independent board. We need to let science flourish in this state.
I've said for years one of the best ways to be green is to make green or save green, meaning if you can make things economically sustainable, you can make them environmentally sustainable as well. The two don't have to be competing with each other. And so we've done a number of things to provide incentives to be more energy efficient. The one thing I won't do, though, is turn over a major, major portion of the state's government to people who are unelected and unaccountable to the taxpayers of the state of Wisconsin.
And then there's the attorney general's race. It's unfortunate that the campaign that voters know the least about, that's a really important office, this is the result. This just shows you how getting information out about elections and campaigns that aren't at the very top of the ticket faces some pretty substantial challenges.
In Wisconsin, some of your governor's own cabinet secretaries said that after all the schemes and cover-ups, they're endorsing Tony Evers for governor because they saw what happened and they didn't like it. Let me tell you something. If somebody who had worked for me said right before an election, he's terrible, I'm supporting the other guy.
The biggest person they could get came into the state of Wisconsin. They brought in a guy who, not me, not the Republican Party, but PolitiFact nationally, out of all the lies in the entire country, who got the biggest lie of the year a few years ago? Barack Obama. And it was the lie about health care. He said, if you like your health care plan, you can keep it. That was the lie of the year. So I guess if you're going to lie about health care and pre-existing conditions, you might well bring in the biggest liar in the world, because that's not my words. Those are PolitiFact's words out there. And that's who came in.
The last Marquette poll released this week is nothing but a snapshot. You and I agree on that. But what I found intriguing, let's talk about the Gov's race first. Mr. Franklin said 547 of those who were asked, who do you back, who do you lean, backed Governor Walker. 547, who do you like, who do you lean, backed Evers. That's pretty amazing. It is, isn't it, JR?
Absolutely. Now, again, like as I think with the poll, there's a margin for error, so it's not a predictor of outcome, it's a snapshot in time. But what's fascinating is if you dive into the numbers. Now, on the one hand, if you look at things like enthusiasm, Democrats are more enthusiastic than Republicans right now.
I think it's only 2 percentage points. Go ahead.
No, actually, it's like 6 or 7. So that was that was better. So a little bit difference from last time. Good for Democrats. The top two issues, health care and education. On those two issues, Tony Evers has a commanding lead on Scott Walker, those who said those are top issues.
Yep.
Independents favor Tony Evers, I think, by 7 points compared to 6 last time. Great for Evers. Scott Walker, job approval rating 50%. It's a pretty good mark for an incumbent.
It's up a percentage point since earlier in the month.
Right track, wrong track for the state. 54-40, I think it was.
Thumbs up.
That's good for Walker, which means that none of this kind of makes sense. Like, how is a guy who's got a 50% approval rating and the state's going the right direction according to 54% of likely voters tied with the challenger? What is going on? Is this the impact of Donald Trump? Is this the Walker fatigue of after 8 years, like third term's kind of tough? I really don't know at this point. Now, we have a new Emerson poll out this morning that had Evers up by 5, I think it was. So you really should look at polls across the spectrum and kind of see where they're at.
As Mr. Franklin will say here in this video we're going to hear from shortly.
The thing to remember is this. If it's truly tied, how many truly undecided voters are there? Because a question I've had for the last couple of weeks is, if you're a truly undecided voter and you've known Scott Walker's going for 8 years, are you likely to say all of a sudden, yeah, no, I'm going to stick with this guy? The rule of thumb has been in politics for years. Undecideds break 2-1 against the incumbent. But I don't know how many there are.
Yeah.
In this poll, there's only 1% like truly undecided or something like that.
Okay, and before we hear from Charles Franklin, I want to Mr. Anderson, the Libertarian candidate, in the October 3 through 7 poll, he had 5%. Now he's down to 3. So there's some indication that they are breaking evenly for both candidates?
Well, the sample is, I mean, we also like dive into the sample, you know, like how's the sample look? And this one was
1,154?
Yeah, but the partisan likelies. Makeup, I think it was like maybe like plus one Republican, something like that.
I think so.
So that's something to consider, what's really going to look like on Election Day. But with third-party candidates, you often see them as an alternative that's get higher numbers in like earlier polls, mm-hmm. then they gradually decline closer to election because when push comes to shove, people realize that that guy's not like or gal's not likely to win. So you're going to cast a vote for that person when these two are on the ballot, and it's probably going to be one of these two who ends up winning.
Okay. Before we come back to the U.S. Senate and the Attorney General numbers, let's hear from Charles Franklin when he released that poll this week. Please.
In June, we had Walker by 2 among likely voters. In August, we had a tie. In September, we had Evers by 5. Then early this month, Walker by 1, and today a tie. I think you just look across that stream, and it's hard to conclude anything other than a true toss-up race. This race could clearly tip either direction based on our data. And let me also mention the other polling by other organizations out there that, since the primary, have had Evers up in all of the other polling by 5, 4, 2, 6, and 8, I believe, if I've got the order right. So other polling is showing a little bit more of an Evers advantage than what we show. Pays your money, you takes your choice, or you average them all together. I'm willing to go with a really close race today.
That means pretty obviously that who gets their voters to the polls between now and Election Day, at least by our data, is where the advantage lies. You know, this has been close in most of our polls, so I'm not surprised to see a close race. But one that's essentially dead tied is a pretty unusual outcome.
Now let's talk about the U.S. Senate poll with Mr. Franklin. Numbers, the incumbent Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin, 54%. Challenger Republican State Senator Leah Vupemir, 43%. No big change. You and I have heard seen other polls suggesting it may not be double digits. But this is the second straight Franklin poll that's had her double digits.
Emerson this morning was 8 or 9.
8 or 9.
But what's been consistent is the lead for Baldwin. There was one poll in August at a 2-point race. Yeah. Everything else on Marquette's been double digits. And what more reinforces that is that we have not seen independent groups come in and spend heavily for Vukmir.
I was going to ask about that.
We also haven't seen them come spend for Baldwin. Now, like I check independent expenditure reports with the FEC every week, and there are groups doing digital ads, doing turnout, but I'm talking like the big multi-million dollar ad campaigns. We got a couple of those early from like Americans for Prosperity, another group, but they've all kind of gone away. We have not seen that outside spending on TV in a heavy volume that we've seen in past
those
races.
Those groups are now spending money in Montana and Indiana and Missouri, aren't they?
So you have a confluence of things. Tammy Baldwin has raised since the end of 2012, $31 million?
$31.3 is what you reported.
That's a lot of money, Steve. Like, we still have, that's still a couple weeks ago in the race, last time we got her numbers.
Feingold, that was through October 17th.
Feingold and Johnson were like at $20 and $24 million for their campaigns.
Yeah.
All right, let's tell you how much she's been. Vukmir, $5 million and change, which is nothing to sneeze at, but it tells you she hasn't had the megaphone that Baldwin has to be on the air. And what we're seeing is this pre-existing condition issue has been a problem for Republicans up and down the ballot across the country. I don't know if we saw this coming a year ago or a year and a half ago, but it has become one of the issues of this race. And Baldwin has been pounding on it time and time again with Buchmeyer, and that's helped define her. And if you look at the Marquette numbers, Buchmeyer's upside down with voters.
Yeah, I'm going to go there. But first, quickly on the attorney general race, Mr. Franklin's got the incumbent Republican Brad Schimel at 47%, challenger Josh Kyle at 44. That's essentially no change from the poll earlier in the month.
It's been gradually tightening now, tightening but small movement. So it's 47-41, I think, in September. A couple things happening. Democrats are figuring out who their candidate is and coming home. One of the great questions about this race is, how will the top of ticket impact it? The ballot order this year is governor, other constitutional offices, and U.S. Senate.
Right.
So if I'm a low-information Democratic voter, and I'm unhappy with Governor Walker, and I'm unhappy with Donald Trump, and I like Tammy Baldwin, I vote for Evers. Do I catch all the constitutional offices before I go to Baldwin? Do I skip any over? Do I go down to Congress and like the legislative races? Who knows? Right. Other things to watch. Does Brad Schimel, has he created any kind of like unique profile with voters beyond being a Republican? When I talk to people, they generally think that this race is going to reflect the governor's race. Maybe a point or two difference, depending on drop-off from the governor's race, the AG race, and if Schimel has any kind of like bipartisan attraction, which is why you see him playing that up. And if there is a Evers win on Tuesday and Call doesn't win, the great postmortem will be, why do you wait so long to go on TV? We're seeing TV ads from him now in the Democratic Attorney General Association, but they waited the last 3 weeks to get on the air. That'll be a big second guessing, I guess you could say, if he doesn't pull it off and Evers does win.
Right. Okay, but now let's do a deep dive into what you alluded to earlier, the pre-existing condition debate. And let's frame that with Governor Walker, Mr. Evers, and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald. What they've been saying over the last 3 weeks on pre-existing condition, pay special attention to what Senator Fitzgerald said because it has a direct bearing to what the governor said yesterday. Please.
They don't want you to see what they're really talking about. They want to lie about what's happened. I want to tell you about one particular lie you can help us out with. Pre-existing conditions. Pre-existing conditions. You see, in Wisconsin, we can protect people with pre-existing conditions without protecting the failure that is Obamacare in this state. We can do it. It's simple. As long as I'm your governor, we will always cover people with pre-existing conditions. My wife, Tonette, over there, is a type 1 diabetic. My mother is a survivor of breast cancer, almost 2 years to the day. My brother, my little brother, who's now bigger and taller than I am, he has a heart condition. Like a lot of you here tonight and a lot of people across the state and around the country, covering people with pre-existing conditions is personal to me, like it is to a lot of your families. I think it is outrageous that Tony Evers and Tammy Baldwin and liberals across the country are playing politics with people's health care. We will always cover people with pre-existing conditions.
We have had a governor who's done everything he could to gut the Affordable Care Act and the pre-existing condition protections that exist for 2.4 million people of the state of Wisconsin. And now he is in federal court trying to get rid of the entire Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, along with those pre-existing conditions. And right now, he's spending millions and millions of dollars on TV trying to erase that record and encouraging people to trust him. Now, let me ask you this. Do you trust Scott Walker to protect your health care? Actions speak louder than words, folks, and you know it. He will not.
He at one point said he'd like to see you guys take up that pre-existing conditions bill that the Assembly passed a while back. Is that something you guys might look at?
I wouldn't rule it out because obviously it's generated a lot of heat during this campaign and the election cycle. But I know I got members that probably are not on board, which is one of the reasons that it wasn't something that we tackled at the end of session.
Now I want to read what the governor said yesterday at an appearance in Waukesha, JR. It's only two sentences. No matter what happens in the courts or in the Congress, in Wisconsin, we'll codify that. The exact same language, and that's important, that's in the Affordable Care Act. We'll make sure everyone living with a pre-existing condition is covered here in the state. So, but go back to what Senator Fitzgerald said. We couldn't get support for the Assembly-passed bill, which is not as strong, mm-hmm. as the language in the Affordable Care Act. So my question is, did the governor set the bar so high knowing that the legislature, when it comes back later this month, will not enact what he said he wants yesterday?
Let me answer your question with a question. Is Tony Evers going to raise the gas tax by a dollar?
No.
Has that stopped Scott Walker or his allies from saying Tony Evers may raise a gas tax by a dollar?
No.
Tony Evers opened the door to that argument by the first day after the primary saying everything's on the table.
Yes.
Scott Walker opened the door to this attack on the persisting conditions because when Congress is debating a repeal bill, repeal and replace bill, he initially said he was open to a waiver you could get on this issue, quickly said no, and he supports authorized a lawsuit to overturn the Affordable Care Act, which now includes these protections. Now, there's all kinds of stuff in the healthcare industry that I don't really quite understand. I'm not going to try and dive into it about what would really happen if the Affordable Care Act went away. But the reality is both of these gentlemen have opened the door to these attacks with what they've said and done, and their opponents have now used them effectively. This is an issue that Scott Walker has not found the right footing on yet. You can tell in how he's messaged it. Look, even the ad with his mom, where she says, "You're doing a great job, Scott."
Right.
She mentions, "You take care of people like me who've had cancer." It alludes to the pre-existing condition issue. Like, this is their big challenge. One of their big challenges is how to address this issue. And I don't know that he's found the right message, which is why you might see what might have led to this statement this week about the exact same language.
Okay, do I have this right? The governor said yesterday, I want the language in the Affordable Care mm-hmm. Act that protects pre-existing conditions. But I'm also in court with Attorney General Schimmel in Texas to completely throw out the Affordable Care Act that includes that language. Do I have that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, to answer your real question, are they going to come back and do this? Look, depending on what happens on Tuesday, I don't know if they're going to come back at all in this extraordinary session November 12th.
Okay.
If Republicans hold the governor's office in both houses, they probably don't need to. You know, they can do with Kimberly Clark whatever they can try and work and stuff later on. If Democrats win one, I don't know if they'll feel the necessity to, because what are they going to do? I really don't know if they're going to come back and do anything. But the fact is, as long as the Affordable Care Act is in place, the people I talk to don't see a way that they take up this bill in the Senate because they don't need to. Now, if it's struck down November 7th or 8th, maybe it changes the story. But as long as that law is in place, I don't know they're going to come back and do anything.
Okay, I want to stay on this for one more thing. When you go deeper into Mr. Franklin's poll, and you 43% of those who responded listed health care as either number one or number two. Then when they're asked, who do you support, those people who ranked health care top, 65% supported Mr. Evers, 32% supported Mr. Walker. That's a 2-to-1 disparity. But then I want to talk about the U.S. Senate. When you ask the same question about the U.S. Senate race, 70% supported Democratic Senator Baldwin, 27% supported Leah Vukmir, even though I looked up her official bio, a nurse for 37 years, including 20 years as a certified pediatric nurse practitioner.
What the message we've heard from Baldwin over and over on TV is about health care. Pre-existing conditions, cochlear implants, oral chemotherapy. I mean, it's been relentless. And one thing I've noticed is looking at 2016, you know, Ron Johnson had a moment in August. I think he fired his kind of creative staff and reconfigured his messaging when he was down to Russ Feingold. At that point, Feingold was up in the polls, and Feingold's message kind of like didn't really go for the throat. Tammy Baldwin's not making that mistake. If she, you know, hey, strange things can happen, you know, I'm not going to predict the outcome will be. But if she's going to win, she's winning because she's keeping the pedal down through the finish line. She's not letting Leah Vukmir up and keeping this message constant on the airwaves.
And one more thing on Mr. Franklin's poll, and then I'm done with it, promise. The approval rating for President Trump, who is a huge backdrop on all of these all of these campaigns, mm-hmm. maybe not your local Leggy race, but anyway. I looked it up 5 or 6 months ago. His approval rating in February and March, 50% disapprove, 43% approve, 50% in this latest poll continue to disapprove. So that's kept him at 50% disapproval and approval up 3 percentage points. 3 percentage points up significant? No.
No. And what I'm watching, so to take from what we saw in this poll to watch on Tuesday, all right? his numbers got better. The Gallup tracking poll had consistent improvement down Trump until Monday. All of a sudden, it went back apart by 4 points. Why? Republicans will tell you that the caravan, migrant caravan, working its way through Central America up toward, we assume, the U.S. border, that's been a gift to reignite the base in some ways, on top of the Kavanaugh confirmation fight. Yeah. But now the president is, you know, really throwing a lot of stuff at the wall about immigration. Is that turning people off? I don't know how those things impact each other, but we always talk about what happens at the very end. What pushes people? So can the GOP turnout machine, the Dem turnout machine, can they get their people to the polls? Does something with the president move people one way or another? Does this message on pre-existing conditions help Scott Walker or hurt him? Those things to watch. And it's a cliche as old as time in politics. It truly is. If it's really a tied race, who turns their people out? I mean, that's really it's a cliche, but it's true.
And wasn't it yesterday that President Trump said that, quote, two crazies, I think that's a term, the one accused of sending the pipe bombs and the one accused of the 11 deaths at the Tree of Life Synagogue, upset the Republican momentum, but okay, we got to move on. The feds this week okayed Governor Walker's Medicaid waiver that will impose a work requirement, a worker job training on childless, healthy Medicaid recipients between the ages of 19 and 49. They'll be required to 80 hours of work or job training per month to stay on Medicaid. There's the hammer. If you fail to meet work requirement over a 48-month period, you lose coverage for 6 months. And the state can charge monthly $8 premiums and $8 copays if you go to an emergency room but you don't have an emergency. Disapproved, though, was this big issue in 2015 when they passed the budget, the proposal to require drug tests. And part of that was if you failed it, you would have resources, you would get treatment. Instead, the Medicaid recipients must complete a health assessment in which they will be asked about drug use. You saw the release from Assembly Democratic Leader Gordon Hintz. This means about 5,000 more people will lose Medicaid. Not a coincidence that this was approved 5 days before the election, right?
And yet the news was kind of buried in some ways. There's just so much going on. I don't know if that's breaking through with people as they kind of look toward, okay, who am I going to vote for on Tuesday?
Yeah, okay. Moving on, I was intrigued because the choice program, the voucher program, started in Milwaukee, I think, in 1991, then in 1995. It was expanded to include religious schools. It was going to cost, for the first time, over $300 million. And you have the number of students participating in choice up 8% in a year to 39,381. 28,000 of those are in Milwaukee. 3,300 of them in Racine, 7,100 outside Milwaukee in Racine. But biggest increase is outside Milwaukee and Racine, up 57%. 81% is paid by you and I in our state general purpose taxes, and 19% comes from reduced state aid to MPS. The cost by specific program, $221 million for Milwaukee, $25 million for Racine, $54 million statewide. And one reason I included this, JR, is because Mr. Evers said that when you and I get our property tax bills here in a few weeks, if he gets his way, it would show how much state aid, how much we're subsidizing the choice program. So I just included that because we're up to $300 million. It's a big deal issue.
There's a political angle to this, too. There are a couple of groups, at least one group, running digital ads hitting Tony Evers because he has said that he would like to phase out the choice program. Now, that likely is not going to happen because we don't expect the assembly to flip. So it would be hard-pressed to get that through Republican-controlled assembly. But that issue is out there percolating, and it shows you how they micro-target voters anymore. I mean, that's an issue that these groups are, pouring into Milwaukee to try and appeal to a constituency that may be inclined to vote for you on other issues, but may say, well, I'm not sure because of this one thing.
Yeah, and when I've interviewed candidates, the outstate candidates, some of their answers in terms of the future of choice and the vouchers depends on whether there are participating private schools in their districts. So it's a very live issue. Okay, let's go to your stock picks. Rising.
So big donors, we saw this week the impact of a rewrite of campaign finance law by Republicans a few years back. Go back a few years ago, there used to be an aggregate limit. Each donor could give $10,000 per year in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. That meant everybody.
That was a cap.
Candidates, you know, whether governor, assembly, senate, parties, everything. That acted as a de facto cap when you could give to parties because people, if they had their choice, they were going to go give to the governor, candidate, or legislator. Well, a series of court decisions threw those things out, all right? And when they rewrote the campaign finance law, Republicans did, They kept the no limit. They had no limit on political parties and no limit on transfers from parties to candidates.
No limit.
No limit. And we saw this week the impact of that.
Used to be 10,000. Erase that. No limit.
Now, I saw this coming this summer. In August, I did a story where we looked at, I found a couple dozen donors who had maxed out to Governor Walker. You give $20,000 per candidate, who had maxed out to Walker and then gave several million dollars collectively to the state Republican Party. It's like, where that's going to go? Well, we found out this week. They transferred $2.8 million to Walker, gave him in-kind contributions of $700,000, then did another $1.1 million after the reporting period closed. This is a sign of how this money can flow now from large donors to a party to a candidate. It helped fuel Walker's financial edge on Evers in the closing weeks of the race. Now, Evers got big donations too, but I did not see as large a checks from Democratic donors to the party as I did to the Republican one. And I asked some people, why is that? And the Dems kind of feel like their big, deep-pocketed donors aren't as, well, one, they don't like the idea of that big a check going to politics, and two, they're kind of a little more shied away from the attention, whereas a Dick Uihlein, one of the major donors of the Republican Party of Wisconsin, he's known nationally. He's one of the biggest donors to national politics. I mean, it's not just Wisconsin. He leaves an imprint everywhere. So you see the influence of big checks in these reports these days.
Groups that are helping Governor Walker, trying to get him reelected. His own campaign, the state Republican Party, the Republican Governors Association, and all these third-party groups.
Yeah, and then Evers has got the Democratic Governors Association, Greater Wisconsin. I mean, there are like just numerous groups that are doing canvassing. There's a lot of money being spent this year on the campaigns.
Okay, mixed.
So, Paul Ryan, this week, if you saw on Twitter, if you follow the president like I do,
Said he can't do that.
He took a swipe at Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan had the courage to say that a president can't change the Constitution by executive order. Now,
Article 14, which says if you're born here, you're a citizen.
That may not seem like a controversial thing to say, but because Ryan said it during a radio interview with a Kentucky station, President Trump slapped him down, saying he doesn't know what he's talking about, and he should stick to trying to maintain the majority. Well, don't forget Paul Ryan has raised tens of millions of dollars trying to help that Republican majority maintain. He's traveled across the country trying to help those candidates to do that. But it shows you he's played nice with the president for like 18 months. They've actually kind of gotten along.
Yeah.
But it shows you if you cross President Trump at all, you're going to get the proverbial Twitter slap. Just kind of a reminder of the way things have gone with that relationship.
That's a good mix. And falling?
So corrections. We got a new report that we are going to have a record number. We had a record number of prisoners in state prisons in 2017. It's going to climb higher. We're going to hit 25,000 in 2021, I believe.
Yeah, mid-2021.
So this Department of Corrections is going toward a record number of inmates. It already has strains on its staff. It's going to require more money from taxpayers. And, oh, by the way, there's a debate whether to build a new prison in the next biennium. So a lot of challenges for that department ahead.
I agree. And when you named this as falling, I went a little deeper. Right now, state officials say our adult prison system was built for 17,400 inmates. So if they get 25,000, that is 43% over capacity. And to keep those potential 25,000 inmates, they're seeking GPR, general purpose revenue, of $1.25 billion, which would be a 10% increase in only 2 years.
And oh, by the way, the budget request did not include money for a new prison, and we have two of them built in the 1890s?
Yes.
Waupun and Green Bay?
Yeah, Waupun 1897, and Waupun 1852, Green Bay, which is really in Alloway, 1897. Okay, that's enough on prisons. Okay, you and I, a week from now, will know all these answers. Should be a great rewind, and we don't make predictions, do we?
Not anymore.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And that's Rewind 4, let me get it right, November 2?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.